Welcome to episode one, Culture and Context. My name is Samuel. I'm a college student studying to be a dentist, applying to dental school.
Yeah, I mean, Sam played high school basketball, so he got a little bit of knowledge. But my name is Corey Wheeler. Like Sam said, welcome to Culture and Context. I'm currently a grad assistant at Oakland University, so I do a lot with the men's basketball team, stuff like that. If you don't know a little bit about Oakland, it's head coached by Greg Campy. He's the third longest tenured Division I basketball coach behind Coach Krzyzewski and Jim Boeheim. He's been doing it 35 years. The guy know a lot. I mean, we got players that played at Oakland, Kendrick Nunn, Kay Felder. Travis Bader, he held the record for three-pointers until Fletcher McGee broke it last year. Another guy on our staff, Tony Jones, he coached under Bruce Pearl at Tennessee. So, you know, I mean, I got a little bit of experience with the basketball stuff. And what our goal with this Culture and Context, you know, mainly we want to focus on basketball, the NBA, college, whatever. And also – the culture part, we know we like films, we like music. Sadly, we didn't have a podcast going when Avengers came out, but I'm sure we'll make an episode talking about, you know, the aftermath of what we think is going to happen in the next phase of the MCU. We talk a lot about music, and hopefully we just want to bring a fluid conversation because, like I said, me and Sam go way back to high school. So, I mean, we always have phone conversations about this type of stuff. So I thought podcasting would be a natural thing for us to do. So hopefully we could bring a fluid conversation for you guys to listen. This is not our first go-around at Culture and Context. We had one, I think it's been 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it went well the first time. It just, you know, life got in the way. So hopefully the second time around we'll be a little bit more consistent. And, yeah, so...
You know, and thanks to this Anchor app, this will definitely be a lot easier to do. For sure.
Yeah, so with this first episode, we wanted to get one done before the first game of the NBA Finals, but things didn't turn out that way. So we're just going to try to talk about some of the things we thought about going into the series and a little bit of our reaction after game one. The podcast, like, we're going to come to you guys, like, whenever something major happens, of course. But also, we're going to try to do it two or three times a week if whatever the schedules permit. Sometimes some weeks get busier than others. But so, yeah. So, Sam, what did you think about going into both the finals? You know, what did you think about going into the finals with both teams? You know, no KD for the Warriors. Surprised DeMarcus Cousins played. What did you think?
Well, first off, I realized this is probably the best defensive team they'll play. Like, they've played in, like, the last 5 years. So I knew they would probably have a few issues with that. But my main thing with the Warriors going into it, I figured that, let's see, they score at such a high pace that regardless of what the Raptors did, I didn't feel the Raptors would be able to score at a high enough pace. But with the game one, it kind of showed a few things that kind of surprised me. But
all right, just hold off on the
yeah, no.
We're gonna get to game one. But what did you think? Like, how did you think the series would play out? Did you think the Warriors would win in five? I mean, obviously we saw what happened in game six. One, so the Warriors not winning in four.
Yeah.
But what did you project what happened? Like, what did you think?
So I figured probably the surrounding cast around Kawhi Leonard would be over a span of, I don't know, 4 or 5 games. Probably just couldn't produce at a efficient and probably a high enough level. So, like, Kawhi would put up good numbers and, you know, the rest of his teammates would get good looks, but I just – didn't think they'd be able to make the shots. But yeah, I just didn't think they'd be able to make shots.
Yeah, I thought, me and Sam, we were big on the Bucks. I thought, you know, I don't try to overthink this basketball NBA stuff. The Bucks had the best record all year long, and they played the most consistent basketball I've seen outside of the Warriors in a long time. Like, the Cavaliers was making it to the finals, but, like, the regular season for them wasn't that consistent.
Yeah.
You know, so I figured the Bucks, and, you know, I just think it's hard to three-peat. I just think it's really hard for the Warriors to three-peat. I mean, only X amount of teams have three-peated in the history of basketball. I mean, in the last 10 to 15 years, the only team that's three-peated was the Michael Jordan and Bulls. The Larry Bird Boston Celtics didn't three-peat. Magic Johnson didn't three-peat. So, and those Showtime Lakers. So, it's just really hard to three-peat because the mental side of it. And when you look at the Warriors, like, they have a good – I mean, I never questioned their leadership abilities. Bob Myers, the front office, Steve Kerr, we know what he's done. Steph Curry. So, I never questioned that. But just in so far as winning this series, I just figured the Warriors would win in about 5 or 6. I mean, it's no knock on the Raptors. I just think Kawhi – night in and night out, like you said, it's just the consistency of a second scorer. I mean, obviously in game one, Pascal had 32. And I think the Raptors did a good job all playoffs long of, I mean, it's not one guy, but somebody usually steps up.
Somebody always shows up, yeah.
I just don't know if that will be the case this series. But one thing I think, like you said, the Warriors haven't faced a defense this good probably since the Oklahoma City Thunder.
With Kevin's
last year there in this little run. They haven't faced, like, the Cavs were never that great of a defensive team.
Mm-hmm. They schemed really well when it came to the Warriors, yeah. They schemed really well.
But when they got Kevin Durant, I mean,
yeah, no.
But they won one game and it was 8-1 in the last 2 years NBA Finals. So
that broke the wheel, I guess you would say.
Yeah, and then Cavaliers got significant. Last year, they didn't have Kyrie Irving. A lot of people forget about that. LeBron to make it to the finals without Kyrie Irving. But anyways, but one thing I do think about the Raptors going into the series, I knew that their ball screen defense would be something that the Warriors never faced, at least in this playoffs, because of Marc Gasol. And then you add Pascal Siakam. I think you need a lot of wings, good wings, to beat the Warriors. And so you got Pascal and Kawhi Leonard, two great defenders. And then you throw in, like, Marc Gasol, and I think he proved it in game one. He wasn't getting killed on the 1-5 screens like maybe a lot of people thought he would. You know, I just figured, I think the biggest X factor to the series is Marc Gasol. He can consistently play well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he don't have to score a lot. He don't have to get a lot of assists. He don't have to get a lot of rebounds. But his positioning on defense, guarding that 1-5 ball screen, and just making the right play and getting them to their half-court offense, you think about Marc Gasol. He had a long, really long career, great career, come from good basketball pedigree. Pau Gasol is his brother, you know. So,
I just think – And even for Marc Gasol, he's a former Defensive Player of the Year. So, I mean, no matter how much athleticism he loses, he still has those, you know, those skill sets to where he can –
Not even the skill set, just the mental.
Yeah.
The mental part of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, the Raptors, they've shown me some stuff. I don't know whether you want to get into the game or not yet, but –
Yeah, we go ahead and talk about the game. I mean, my first reactions was I don't think Pascal's going to score 32.
Yeah.
And 14-17. I think, like I told you the other day about the game, I just always felt like the Raptors were going to win game one no matter what.
Yeah, and the Raptors were actually favored to win, so nobody.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really – I wasn't shocked that they won game one. Like, I wasn't like, oh, my God, the Raptors won game one. Like, this is going to be a series. I felt, you know, with the rest, you know, mm-hmm. Warriors, they rested for a long time. And I think it's hard when you're playing in games that big. The people who usually win those games are the ones who could get settled in the fastest. Like the nervousness, the nerves. In the NBA Finals games, a lot of the times it's a lot of people on the court. before, you know, it's not like you. The atmosphere is different.
Yeah, definitely. And then the players know that they know the situation, so that's another thing that plays in their mind. So yeah, no, it's definitely a different feel for sure.
So I thought with the Raptors just coming off a emotional tough series and the Warriors coming off a basically a sweep,
yeah,
of the Blazers, I just felt like the Raptors would be recalled back to the moment quicker than the Warriors would.
Yeah.
And because they just came off that. So, and I think that proved to be true throughout the first game.
Yeah. But my main thing, and about there is a few other things I have, but the carelessness of the Warriors when they pass the ball sometimes. So, and I think they had 19 turnovers this game. So, like, that's I think that's been Curry's main issue these 5 years, going into a series or even when they get down in the series. It's just a lot of – because, like, with Curry, me and you both know that Curry's probably best played as a secondary ball handler, not the guy making all the main decisions. But when you get him doing too much for the offense when it comes to, like, facilitating, he can get a little sloppy. So, yeah, I just feel like it was just a lot of sloppy passing and a lot of trying to thread the needle when I didn't feel like they needed to. So, yeah, mainly it's just the turnovers. And I'm pretty sure they can fix that, because all that is just making the right reads and not assuming stuff will be open. Because, like I said, this is the best defense that they've played in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And a lot of the times when you when the Warriors lose games, it's like you said, because of the turnovers. But I don't know. Curry can get sloppy at times. And I just think they, one thing we haven't talked about is I just think they really need Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we want to talk about this a little bit later, but I think this series have big implications for the summer. And I mean, if the Raptors do go ahead and win game two, Kevin Durant comes back game three. Or what if he don't come back at all, or he come back too late, and it's like the whole world could see, like, okay, the Warriors aren't winning this without Kevin Durant.
Yeah. You know? But, like, I was even thinking about that the other day. If you don't have KD, you're clear. Well, if they're maxing out players, I would have to. I'll probably
what you're saying. I agree with that too. You don't have to have an Aaron McKinney out there,
yeah,
or Quinn Cook. You got freedom to go sign some other players. But at the same time, maybe the Warriors are thinking, like, okay, we need this guy. Like,
yeah,
you know, maybe, you know, and maybe, yeah, and make Durant feel a little better. But anyways, back to the game. I don't know. Like, what do you think going to happen in game? Like, what do you see? How you see this playing out for game two? Like?
So, it's weird because, like you said, Pascal playing that well. The Splash Brothers combined for 65, or is it 50? I think it was either 55 or 65. So usually they don't ever play that well in the play. Well, I ain't gonna say that. I just, like, they played fine. So besides turnovers, scoring wise, they did what they needed to do, but it just seemed like they were always down. So I don't know whether they have to get better looks for the rest of the team, or the, like, Curry and Clay just need to get better, more looks. I don't know. It's confusing because Draymond, obviously, he's only going to give you 6 or 8 points. Curry might give you 30. Clay will try to get you about 25.
I've been seeing this thing, like, a lot of analysts and people have been saying, like, Fred VanVleet locked up Steph Curry. What do you think about that? Like, is VanVleet Fleet the Curry stopper?
No.
I mean, it makes sense because, like, Curry's so quick, he get a shot off. You know, Fleet is a good defender, and he's smaller and maybe quicker, just as quick or quicker than Curry. So maybe he could cause him some problems. I mean, throughout this whole Warriors run, the only person that kind of – I mean, he's obviously Fred is not Patrick Beverley. But – I don't know. I don't think Curry's seen a guy like this. Maybe, what's the guy the Cavs had the first year?
Matthew Dellavedova.
Yeah, Dellavedova. And obviously, VanVleet is probably quicker in Dellavedova, but Dellavedova is a great defender. So maybe the Raptors got something with this Curry stopper.
I don't know. He went 8 for 18, which is damn near 50%.
I guess the turnovers is what.
Yeah, it's now I would say as the just the Raptors defensively as a team effort, they've disrupted a lot of stuff. But I don't think Curry actually had a fantastic game just from the normal stats, but
so I don't know.
Like, it's weird because I rewatched the game, and it just seemed like they were just down, but they were playing their normal Warriors basketball. But of course, since they only scored 109, that just means that they probably were never able to get their first look. So it was probably took up a lot more time within their possessions. Even though obviously they still got 109, but you know how high scoring games are now. So I just think. Honestly, I don't even know because I don't really see where they can get more scoring from.
Yeah, I don't either. Maybe usually I feel like even though, you know, you got Steph, you got Klay, I'm not going to say I feel like the Raptors felt like, okay, yeah, we'll live with that and let anybody else score. But it did seem like they really held everybody else in check. Like Iguodala had 6, Jordan Bell had 2, Draymond Green had 10,
yeah,
Kevon Looney had 9. Like the outside of Klay and Steph, they didn't really get much help. I mean, Draymond had a fantastic game. He does what he do. He rebounds. He assists. He had another triple double. But other than that, like the Warriors do have a terrible roster at this point. You know,
yeah,
I thought it's been bad all year, but surprisingly, they made it to the finals. I mean, it's not surprising, but. With the roster they got, you want to look at this and say, I mean, of course, their starting five is phenomenal, but outside of that, their bench is awful. So,
hold on. I mean, cut you off. So, when I was watching it, that's what I was thinking about. They have to, I guess, kind of generate two different offenses and have to get DeMarcus Cousins going, even though this is a long shot. They got to get some more scoring from him.
Yeah, I heard Steph Curry press conference. I mean, not Steph. Steve Kerr press conference after the game. He talked about how the turnovers, of course, but he also talked about transition defense was horrible for the Warriors. He felt like he felt like they could have got more stops in transition. I mean, which I think Toronto's, and this is where Durant comes in. Obviously, they're gonna make it a half court game. They're not going to let the Warriors fly up and down the court and shoot those transition threes. I mean, I was watching the game, and it had to be at least 10 instances where the shot clock was running down for the Raptors. They're not shooting the ball unless it's under 10 seconds in the shot clock or unless they get a great early look. If they don't get a great early look, they walk the ball up the court. Like, yeah. I mean, I feel like they're thinking their philosophy is, yeah, we want to run. But also, if they make a basket or if we don't get a clear opportunity in transition, let's just slow it down and play the way, you know, a very slow pace. And as you can see, like you said, the Warriors only scored 109 points. So,
oh, yeah. I'm looking at the field goal percentage now. And kind of my theory that I probably had for a long time with how to beat the Warriors, you have to have just capable – players from a 1-3 to make Curry work. So they had a lot of switches where Curry was on Siakam or Gasol, and I think they probably scored by above like 70% on those possessions. So yeah,
Gasol definitely took advantage of the switches. Siakam, he got a weird game to me. It's like he kind of scored, but it's like very like
it has a conventional. It reminds me of how Kyle Anderson probably should play, but he's just too slow.
It's similar. I don't think I've ever seen somebody quite like Siakam.
Yeah. Like he's just smart. He's just good with angles. He's really good with angles.
You could tell like he's very raw still.
Yeah, somehow. Yeah.
So
and his like what makes him so dangerous is attacking the weak side defense, or basically he's always attacking the rotation. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like there'll be a pick and roll on the other side, or maybe even he'll be the roller. Now he just had to make a decision with 4-on-3, or even if it's 4-on-4.
Exactly.
He got enough space to, you know, stretch out and make the right decision. So yeah, no, he's probably the best, probably one of the best attackers that's not a star off the dribble when you're dealing with rotations and stuff. So I think if Draymond doesn't figure it out, they may be in for a, he won't score 32 again, but he only shot 3 threes and only made 2. He only had 2 free throws. So that's a lot of paint points he was getting.
And a lot of transition buckets. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you go 14-17. Like, I mean, but I think, what do you think is like going to determine the rest? I mean, obviously, with KD coming back, let's do 2 scenarios. If KD doesn't come back, what do the Warriors got to do?
So if he doesn't come back, they got to generate enough points against this defense in order to...
Like, how do they do that, though? Like, do they...
DeMarcus Cousins, I feel like.
Yeah, that's tough. Because if you banking on DeMarcus Cousins, I mean, Kawhi might be holding up a chip.
Yeah.
So, I just feel like the pace. They got to pick up the pace. I mean, the Raptors are probably efficient offensive team, but they're not a great offensive team. They don't have a lot of, I mean, you look at game one, everybody contributed, but they don't have a lot of, like, I don't think they can score with the Warriors. So I just think the Warriors got to go. Like, they got to really enforce pushing the pace. But what comes with that is, like you said, the turnovers. I mean, that's always been a problem with the Warriors. I think it's something that can be fixed. Like, it's not like a death sentence. I just think the Raptors are in a good position unless Kevin Durant comes back, because I think they're going to win game 2. And I think KD come back game 3, I don't know. I don't know, because if Kawhi could guard Kevin Durant, like, is that?
Yeah, because really how I'm looking at the next game, it feels like the Raptors lost in the sense that Kawhi didn't play his best, but the outlook for the next game kind of looks better for the Raptors than the Warriors. Because, I mean, the Warriors, they got the looks they want, because I was telling you, the Raptors, it didn't seem like they were giving up. Oh, no, it didn't seem like they were trying to take away anything, really. So, I don't know. I don't know.
I just think when Kevin Durant goes out, I mean, yeah, you get Steph Curry flying off ball screen. You get that action. I mean, flying off down screen and stuff. But they main bread and butter, like I've been saying for the past couple of years, is the Draymond Curry pick and roll. And they revolutionized the pick and roll, you know, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like, you got Kawhi and Siakam and Marcus off. And, I mean, Van Fleet is a smart defender, and Kyle Lowry is a smart defender. So, like, regardless if Durant does come back, I don't know, man. It's looking good for the Raptors.
Yeah, no, usually when you – like, this isn't even a Golden State's best game, but outside the turnover, this is a normal – Warriors game, and they came out on top. So from a Warriors standpoint, I would say either Curry just gets more possessions, so eventually he's got to get to the point where he becomes more of an inefficient scorer. But if he's all he's got, then he has to put up the shots. But I don't know. But no, Van Fleet somehow stop Curry. Curry was 4-for-9 from 3, 8-for-18 from the field. So, for maybe a team effort of getting him, probably not the best look that he wanted on that position. But Curry played fantastic.
A lot of Curry points too, I felt like, came in the last couple of minutes.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
So, I mean, I just think it set up for a great series. I mean, you limit some of them turnovers. I mean, they only won by 9. It wasn't like they blew them out the water.
Yeah.
It seemed like the Warriors just couldn't get over the hump. Like, they were down 3, down 2. Like, and then the game just kind of got away from him a little bit at the end. Mm-hmm. So I think that it'll be close. I don't really see blowouts.
Oh yeah, that's what I was gonna say. So, what, Lowry only made 2 field goals. Kawhi was only he was less than almost 30% from the field. Well, no, he's a little bit over, but like I only see the Raptors playing better from the standpoint of everybody but Siakam. So honestly, oh wow, Marcus had 20. Okay, yeah. So they, like I said, with the Raptors, their offense just works. And Curry, they eventually find Curry on the wrong guy. So they're getting easy looks in the paint. Because to shoot 50% from the field, like throughout like a 90-minute game, is like ridiculous. So I think that they're getting easy looks at the paint, and they're probably not even stressing. Mm-hmm. So honestly, I really don't know. Because they can't play any other bigs because, you know, they don't got McGee anymore. And Cousins, he's never been that kind of defensive player. So I honestly, it's not looking likely, but I know if they clean up the turnovers and that changed the whole vibe of the rest of the game.
It does.
Definitely. So it's really on them with the turnovers, and that limits the fast break points that they have, because you know the Warriors, their turnovers are always live ball. So
right.
It'll yeah. So we'll see, but I feel like we've covered the game one pretty well.
So, predictions for, I guess we can do that tomorrow.
Well, I mean, it's up to you. Or did you want to talk about free agency or the NBA draft a little bit? Or you wanted to split that up?
We could talk about free agency. We could, like I was saying, I think this finals, I mean, this whole playoff had an implication for a lot of what's going to happen. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like in the media, they try to make it seem like these guys got their minds made up in. I don't know. I heard LeBron talking about when he made the first decision to leave Cleveland to go to Miami, and he said he thought about that in the morning. Like, yeah. They're humans. Like, you know how many decisions I've made in my life, and, like, you know which way you lean in, but you don't actually make the decision to, like, the day of or the night before or 2 days before, you know. So I don't think by any stretch that it's all said and done that Kevin Durant is going to New York. I think he could stay. I think they lose. Kevin Durant missed the first 2 games. I think it kind of changed the narrative a little bit. I don't think it's the Durant needs the Warriors to win the championships, I think. But on the other hand, if Kawhi wins, does he go join LeBron? Do he leave Toronto? Like, I mean, in one sense, it's like, okay, regardless of what Kawhi and LeBron do in L.A., Kawhi's, like you said, he's just adding to his ring total by going to play with LeBron. He already won a championship beating LeBron. He already won a championship without LeBron. He might as well go collect 2-3 more and be thought of as the best. Because if he stays in Toronto, like, are they going to win again next year? Like, I don't know.
No.
You know what I mean?
There's always going to be a new team that emerges that we haven't seen coming. So,
so it's like, I mean, I just feel like Kawhi has to go. And then the one thing about Kawhi, I'll say, is like, different from LeBron and from Kevin Durant, he got his pick of the litter. He could choose the best situation to win a lot of championships without any repercussions that these other guys took from as far as their image. Like, LeBron was the number one hated person in America when he left to go join Miami. And some of that he brought on to himself. But Kevin Durant also, he's still the number one hated person in America right now. But Kawhi, if he go play for the Clippers, nobody's going to hate him. If he go play for LeBron, nobody's going to go hate him. Yeah. If he go to New York, nobody's going to hate him. Like, so he could – this could really be interesting, the way this finals is going to shape the way the free agency play out.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. I feel like – if he wants to continue this 60-game schedule that he plays on and to where he doesn't have to rely as much on playing every night to win, in order for them to even, you know, be a high-seeded team, then probably staying is his best bet. But wherever else he goes, he's going to be like their bell cow. So I don't know if he'll be ready to play 82 games next year, because his body's even breaking down now.
You're talking about Kawhi?
Yeah. Because you know, he didn't play. He never played back to backs. He played like 60 games this year.
Yeah, so, is the injury that he's like limping on right now, is that the same one that kept him
last year? I don't know. I think it's just his body is just. Honestly, I don't know. I'm gonna look into it some more, but
because I thought it was a quad or some hamstring or somebody's leg.
But I don't know whether he stepped on somebody's foot. I don't know, but
I think if you Kawhi, you got like you got to know what you got to know that this is not it. Like I don't think he jury went into the situation like, okay, I don't know. Like, he wanted to swing for the fences, but I don't think he planned the next move after that. It wasn't like, all right, we about to get Kawhi, and then, all right, we gonna see what happens next year, and if it still don't work out, we're going to flip Kyle Lowry. Like, I don't think he was thinking like that. I think he was thinking like, okay, we're on the verge of blowing this thing up, you know, so we about to go into a full rebuild because this is not working. And then Kawhi randomly falls into his lap, and it's like, okay, you know, I think it's like, okay, now we have to, you know, we got a chance to win a championship. So
yeah, three games away.
I don't know if Jerry was thinking about, because I just don't think like you got Marc Gasol 35, Kyle Lowry 32. Pascal is emerging superstar, but like, is he really a superstar? Like, you know, like
no, he's a fantastic third. Well, it seems like he's the second guy, but he's a fantastic third option for sure.
And if it was any year for any team in the East to win it, like this was the year.
Yeah. You know?
Because like we saw what happened as far as, I mean, you got the Warriors on the third leg of their championship. They come in hobbled, limping, so that played into their favor. The East, it was an arms race, and they won, you know. So,
yeah.
I don't know if this would be the team next year to win it. Like, you know.
Yeah.
What do you think about Kyrie and Boston and the LA and Anthony Davis situation? How you see all that playing out?
So with Kyrie, I know for sure the offense was way too too diplomatic, or basically it was just too much involved in every player on the court, instead of kind of, I think, how he envisioned it. It was going to be kind of how when Isaiah Thomas played there, where the offense was solely through him. And then the rest of the guys fed off of it. Right. But because of, you know, the success that they had while Kyrie was down, I think I think everybody knows that it destroyed the roles. Like, because me and you, we talk about what makes the Warriors so great is, like, Draymond knows his role. So he knows he won't ever really be needed to score 30 in a game. So he knows he needs to focus solely on playmaking and defense. And Sean Livingston knows he's not as good as Steph Curry, so he doesn't – you never heard him complain about anything when it comes to playing time or anything. But let's say – now, this will just have to be early in Curry's career. But so, basically, the Celtics never had defined roles even going into the year. And then having Hayward, who had the foot injury, that just – it just played a terrible role. And just, I think the thought process of, like, what are we trying to – like, are we trying to win, or are we trying to get this guy healthy? Because, like, I think they started him at the beginning of the year, I know, to try to get his hopes up. But it's like I was telling you, the East wasn't going to be as easy as it usually is. So, like, those wins matter, like, at the end. Like, it clearly mattered.
Man, so. I think – I don't know how I feel about that, but – I mean, I think you were right about what led to the demise of the Celtics. I also think I don't think you can play a democratic offense where everybody shares and touches
the ball. Well, everybody has to know their role. That's the thing.
I agree.
Because, you know, you got Tatum training with Kobe. And, like, the offenses in the NBA aren't even – like, if you're not shooting it at a Kawhi clip, at that efficiency, then you really shouldn't even be shooting those shots. So, I just think there's a lot of miscommunication, a lot of ego, a lot of probably families in the background telling them what they should be, where they should be, instead of just buying into this season and figuring it out at the end of the year.
I think Kyrie coming out and making that comment about what he said to LeBron.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, Kyrie – he has this weird thing with how he wants himself to be perceived in the media. So he thinks he's, like, playing games, but, like, we clearly know what he's doing. So, like, everybody knows he's leaving because, like, this is not his thing to play like this. And it's making him look bad, even though he's proved under probably the greatest player ever, you know, that he's a fantastic scorer when it comes down to breaking down defenses. But when it comes to leading somebody through a 100-game season, I don't know if Kyrie has to be the guy in order to do that.
I mean, honestly, though, like, I know, like, we talk a lot about Kyrie being a bad leader and this and that and the third and all that, but could anybody else succeed in that situation?
I don't know how much of the locker room issues played a part in just the game day-to-day stuff.
I mean, it had to, like – if you Terry Rozier, I don't know if there's anything Kyrie could say to me that'll make me feel like, okay, I'm about to accept my role this year.
It has nothing to do with any of the players. It has everything to do with the management and the culture, getting this message across to the team.
Right. So, I agree. The only thing I would say that Kyrie should have done is he should have understood what the goal was. Like, okay, if I got to suffer a little bit in the stat category, if I got to suffer a little bit, you know, go games where I score 10 points, like, just to make sure